All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And I can tell you, it's been a long time since I was excited about having a guest as much as I am with the guest that I'm going to have today. And it's because I was given a book, a couple months ago. And the name of the book is Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. And it's written by Morris Pearl and Erica Payne, and they are the Patriotic Millionaires. And so we're gonna see if we can get them to spend an inordinate amount of time with you and I, and make us realize that, you know, everybody who has money, that they're not all the same. Anybody who says, "Listen, I'm doing pretty well. I don't need all the tax breaks that are written into law. Let's do something to make it equitable and give other Americans a fair shot at life." And that's kind of who Richard Pearl is, a man who has certainly made a lot of money in his life, but he hasn't forgotten that there are other people in the society who did not do that. And so the Patriotic Millionaires, I want to talk to you and I, those of us who continue to struggle, and let us know that everybody's not opposed or everybody's not so separated from you and I. So it is with that backdrop, Mr. Pearl, that I say welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. It is an honor and a privilege to have you on the air.
Great to be in your show. Thank you for having me.
So, Morris, this is Sandy Williams. Had the good fortune to be involved in the private equity business, and I think from reading your book, I noticed that you were involved with BlackRock, which is essentially the one of the biggest private equity concerns in the United States. But you moved out of that and are now heading up a group of what you call the Patriotic Millionaires. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I was at BlackRock for about a decade. And frankly, what I was doing really had nothing to do with private equity. I was working with clients. They were mostly parts of the government, helping them figure out how much the bailouts were costing the taxpayers. So I spent years delving into Citibank's balance sheets, and I did projects in the United Kingdom, the Hellenic Republic, Greece, the Republic of Ireland. But then I just decided I've done as much as I can for them, and I could do more for my kids by helping to sort of change the course of our government and policies than I could help them and their generation by just, you know, earning a few more dollars. And so for about 9 years now, since, 2014, I've been doing this full time, helping to run a group of hundreds of wealthy business people, investors from all over the country, who are trying to speak out and explain to everyone, including journalists like you, that policies that are progressive are actually good for everybody. You know, we've seen civil unrest going all over the place in our country, you know, including in Wisconsin. You know, and yeah, the proximate cause has been people being murdered. But I think part of it is that there's this huge group of people that thinks they're being treated like second-class citizens. And they're right. There's so many people who are getting richer and richer and richer, partially because investors like me pay almost no taxes. And yet so many other people who work for a living are paying huge amounts of taxes and can't get ahead at all. And they're realizing it's unfair. And we have to change that before our country falls apart. And that's what I'm trying to do.
So I think it's important that I read these two paragraphs. The vast majority of Americans, 71%, believe the economy is rigged in favor of the rich. Guess what? They're right. How do you rig an economy? You start with the tax code. The rich former BlackRock executive Morris Pearl, the millionaire chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, and Erica Payne, the organization's founder, take readers on an engaging and enlightening insider's tour of the nation's tax code, explaining exactly how the rich and politicians they control manipulate the U.S. tax code to ensure the rich get richer and everyone else is left holding the bag. Blunt and irreverent, tax the rich unapologetically dismantles the intellectual justifications for a tax code that virtually guarantees destabilizing levels of inequity and consequent social unrest. Infographs, charts, cartoons, and lively characters, including the work arts and the slumps, make a complicated subject accessible and, yes, sometimes even funny, and illuminate the practical reforms that can put America on the road to stability and shared prosperity before it's too late. Never have the arguments in this book been more timely or more important. Sandy, you wanted to.
Well, no, I just think what you said, Morris, squares with what I've talked about on the show quite a bit, which is that I'm surprised that the business, that the community of people in this country who have accumulated great wealth based on assets, what's happened clearly into our economy is that wealth is not accumulated through working on a job day to day. Wealth is accumulated through the ability to have assets and to do things that will cause the assets to grow in value. And that so we've broken our community down into an asset-owning community and those who don't own assets. And those who don't own assets are not favored by the tax code, and they aren't favored generally because of the way our income levels have broken down. And so the thing that I'm glad and edified to see is that your group represents a group that understands that they have accumulated wealth and with a golden goose. And that the way that our country is currently headed, we're in the process potentially of choking that golden goose. And it's really important that people who have the capacity to affect foreign public policy and have the wherewithal to do it are doing just what you're doing. So I congratulate you.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, there's no particularly good reason why when I make money, I'm sitting here looking at my computer screen, watching the numbers go up and, you know, sometimes down, but over the course of time, generally up. And I don't pay any tax at all. You know, unless if I decide to sell something, yes, then I'll pay taxes. But even then, my tax rates, my brackets are zero for well into high five figures, low six figures, and then 15% up until hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then 20% for as much as I want. So if I just spend money without selling anything, which I can do perfectly well, withdrawing money from my brokerage account, and eventually the brokers will pay it off after I die from selling the stuff, with no taxes paid then either because of the step-up basis rules, of course. Or, you know, I can choose to pay tax at a very low rate if and when I feel like it, as opposed to people that work for a living that have taxes deducted at a higher rate from every single paycheck. And they just don't have a chance to save money and get ahead.
So as an average person who sees this and knows, and you mentioned the lobbyists, and there's some of us who know this is going on, and yet we keep electing people because we don't know that system. The only way the average person could know that system is if they were one of the people who are engaged and involved in that system. And yet people struggle on a daily basis in this society. And we talk about the greatness of our country. And yet systems are set up in this way to make it almost impossible for far too many Americans to even survive in with a modicum of dignity, who are working every day and can't dig themselves out of where they are.
Well, I mean, I think people are beginning to understand these ideas that were crazy ideas, you know, in 2016 are mainstream ideas now. The president of the United States is promoting some of the same ideas that were in our book. You know, people who listen to the Earl Ingram show are understanding this stuff. The chairman of the Senate Finance Committee is on our side promoting these same laws. So I think we are making progress. We are getting some movement in the right direction. We haven't passed any laws yet. You know, there are lots of people who agree with us on every single issue. We've done focus groups, but they're still proudly Republican. They can't see themselves voting for a Democrat just because they agree with the Democrat on every issue because, whatever, I don't know. So I think we're making progress, but we still have, you know, ways to go, but we're working on it.
So Mr. Pearl, if you can hang on, Sandy, on the other side, we'll give you a shot right away. And I am, again, excited and honored about having on the line how lies, loopholes, and lobbyists make the rich even richer. Tax the Rich. This is a book that's written by Morris Pearl and Erica Payne and the Patriotic Millionaires. I would be remiss if we didn't talk about where you could find the book and the humorous parts of it make the reading even a lot better. So we'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. Our special guest is Mr. Morris Pearl. He is the co-author of Tax the Rich, and he's one of the Patriotic Millionaires. Sandy, you wanted to say.
Well, I just, in terms of you, and you're talking about you're an asset investor. And one of the things that happens that K Street does and lobbyists do on behalf of their trade association clients is to weave theories that are sort of all about the public good and the public welfare. And I think one of the things they've tried to persuade the public of is that people won't invest their money if capital gains taxes are too high because, well, they just won't want to take the risks. Is it your experience that the reduction in the capital gains rate that happened under the last 20 years of changing the tax code had much at all to do with people's decision on how they would invest their portfolio? I mean, the fact is that like you said, people started companies when the marginal tax rate was 70% and they still were incented to do it. In the stock market, there's plenty of incentives to go into it, whether the capital gains rate is 15% or 21% or even 30%, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you have a choice. If you have a bunch of money, you have a choice of either, well, you could keep that money in a shoebox under your bed and earn zero and pay no tax at all, or you can invest the money. And if you invest the money and earn a positive return, some will go to taxes and some you'll get to keep. And whether that sum is 1% or 99% or something in between, it's still some. It's more than nothing.
Right.
And yeah, I'd rather earn a return on my investment and keep part of it and use part of it to pay taxes rather than earning no return at all But and yeah, people do have an option to not pay any taxes if they don't earn any money.
Well, and the taxes you pay on capital gains is kind of a good news tax, right? You had capital gains, you made money, and so now you're going to pay out some of it back to the government.
Yeah, I mean the people who risk their money and lose it, they're not the ones paying taxes,
right?
You know, you only pay taxes on profits. I mean, that's just a ridiculous argument. It really is.
But it's an argument that seems to have carried the day, is my point. And we have, I think the problem with the tax code is that it is complicated. The more complicated it gets, the more likely it is that policies regarding it will be made in a dark room, basically by lobbyists and people in Congress who are under the thumb of them.
I mean, the basic argument comes down to, you know, fund managers, whether hedge fund managers or others, claiming, oh, if we have to pay taxes, we're going to go on strike and not invest money or not do what we do. And I mean, frankly, I mean, sure, anybody could threaten to go on strike, but I mean, it's not a credible idea because they don't have any choice. It's not like, I mean, they'd have to move to a different country and give up their citizenship or something if they don't want to invest here in the United States. So it's a ridiculous kind of an argument. They're trying to say, oh, you need to give us this incentive by charging lower taxes for us to do our work. It's not like we have a shortage of people who are willing to become hedge fund managers and investors. You know, if anything, we should be giving incentives to people who want to become like emergency room nurses. We actually do have a shortage of those people. And maybe we could charge those people half the tax rates as everyone else, and we'd solve that problem. But no, there's not a shortage of people who are willing to become hedge fund managers.
Well, and the other thing is that one of the reasons that they want to be in the United States is that the U.S. financial markets are the gold standard. One of the reasons they're the gold standard is our government, to date at least, has carried out, since the SEC was created, a very effective form of regulation. Our accounting community is probably the most ethically bound accounting community. And so we're the gold standard financial market, and you wouldn't be in a successful hedge fund if you located in Moldova.
Yeah, I'm here on Park Avenue. You know, hedge fund managers have their offices all over the place around here. And people from all over the world are sending their money here to New York because they trust people. And part of the reason they trust people is we have all of this regulation and people watching over things. And generally, things going pretty well. Even when things don't go well, we have governments to step in and at least make sure people are being treated fairly. So, yes, the America is where people want to send money in, not where people are taking money out.
One other thing, incidental. You said you're there on Madison Avenue in New York City, right? And that's where all the financial community is centered. That's also about the highest tax location in the United States. So, you know, if it wasn't important to be in New York and be in the financial community that's there, everyone wouldn't be located in this highly expensive center.
Because this is a place where people want to live.
Yeah.
Our local government here has enough money to pay for things like schools and hospitals and roads and parks and stuff like that. We have Broadway theaters right over there. You know, I'm sitting here looking at Grand Central Station out the window. Yes. People want to live and build businesses in high-wage places where the governments have enough money to do things. People are not opening new businesses in Moldova. They're not even opening new businesses in Kansas, where they have far lower taxes than they do here in New York. You look at any place, the place with higher taxes, New York, San Francisco, are the places where people are wanting to move in and open new businesses because there's people to work there, and there's people to shop there, and there's people to spend money. And those are the places where people want to live and work.
All right, listen, we've got to go to a break. Phone lines are open, as always, at 844-967-2789. My guest is Mr. Morris Pearl. He's the co-author of Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. It's Friday. That means my co-host Sandy Williams is with us, too. We'll be right back.
You do.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Morris Pearl, Tax the Rich. He has written a book called Tax the Rich, along with Miss Erica Payne and a patriotic millionaire. Sandy Williams is here. It's Friday. So it's Friday with Sandy Williams. And Mr. Pearl, I want to ask you a question before we turn it back over to Sandy. And I'm that average everyday American who realizes that these loopholes and lobbyists and all those things are going on that keeps the majority of the American people from thriving in a nation that's the wealthiest on earth. And so we know that there's something at the root of it that's wrong. We don't have the capacity to understand all the different technical and aspects of the way the system is set up and being run. But for those of us who've been around a while, we realize that something has happened in this country that's made it more and more difficult for the average American to be to move up any kind of economic ladder. And so we do know, we're not so unmindful, that there are policies that are set in place that do not benefit the average American. And worse yet, we don't see any way possible that that's going to change, I know, in the remainder of my lifetime or in the lifetime of my children. Give me some hope that we are going to see, and not just me, but many of the listeners to this show, some hope that these things could possibly change and that there can be some kind of equity in the way things are run in this country.
Well, sure, things have changed a lot over the years. Sure, we've been going through some bad times the past, you know, 5-6 years. But if some people, you know, if you're old enough to remember when I was born in 1960, I'm 63 now, things were very different then. Things have changed a lot over the course of my generation. And I think we're seeing change now. I think we're seeing a groundswell up, you know, groundswell going on. You know, Abraham Lincoln said that with public opinion, you can get anything done. Without it, you can't do anything. And that's the important thing. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
Right.
So I think we can make changes. These ideas were considered crazy, off-the-wall ideas 10 years ago during the early days of the Obama administration. They are mainstream ideas now. The president of the United States is on our side, you know, and you can look at your local political leaders, you know, talk to your junior senator from Wisconsin. She can tell you what policies she's promoting. You know, look at the tape from when I was talking about the Carried Interest Fairness Act, you know, years ago when we were talking about that, and look and see who's standing next to me when we're talking about how unfair it is that hedge fund managers get credit for the special tax rates for investors, even if they're not investing, but they're just getting paid for their management. You know, we have people on different sides of the issue, and the voters have to decide which side they're on. And if voters are deciding to vote on, you know, which people look like them or which people have the same kind of haircuts they have, then they'll vote one way. And if they're looking to decide which people are going to promote policies that actually help them have more money in their paychecks, they're going to vote a different way. And they have to decide. More, and we're going to see what happens.
You know, I that's a hopeful view, and I am hopeful somewhat in that same regard. And the other thing that makes me hopeful is that you've put together a bunch of people who, there are those who are embittered by the current system who would want to paint millionaires and billionaires as a malicious class of misers taking money at their own expense. But it seems to me that being able to move things in politics has become mired in the problem of the power of special interests and the power of money in politics, and that the Supreme Court decision some while ago Citizens United and some others have caused money in politics to have even more influence. So some of the things that have changed during your lifetime have moved in that other direction because the level of regulation of money in politics was much greater in the 1960s and 70s and 80s than it is right now. And right now, it appears that one of the frustrations people have is they elect someone who gives lip service to the things you're talking about, but when push comes to shove and we find out what the priorities in Congress are, it never gets to the top of the heap. So is your group interested in getting money out of politics, at least money out of politics in the current manner that it's involved in politics?
Yes. I live here in New York City. We have some modest campaign finance reform here. Basically, it used to be the deal that if you want to run for city council or mayor or something, you basically had to be the brother-in-law of a real estate developer or something like that. Now, if you can get a couple hundred people to donate $150 each to your campaign, the campaign finance system will give you matching funds and you'll have like $100,000 and you can run a campaign and you agree not to spend any more than that. And most people, not all, but most people choose to participate in this system. It's voluntary. It's not mandatory. So it's not running afoul of anyone's constitutional rights. And we've promoted a system like that for the federal government, too. It was part of H.R. 1 that passed the House of Representatives twice when Ms. Pelosi was Speaker. And we think the American people want something like that and that it will eventually pass. And so, yeah, we've been working hard to get the influence of big money out of politics. I always say I want to get big money out of politics, especially my money, because it'll be good for me and good for everyone in my category, too, not to have people constantly calling us up, asking for more and more donations.
I guess the chicken and egg problem is there, though, and that is that if money controls politics, when you try to get money out of politics, you've got to somehow get that money in politics that has a lot of control out of the way. And so that's public opinion. That's the ability to actually get people to vote and exercise their power at the poll in a manner that diminishes or at least offsets this moneyed power. And that, I think that's people have seen that as sort of the hopeless side of this. I take it you feel more hopeful about that.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel more hopeful. I think we have some politicians who are not taking any money from, you know, corporate PACs, for instance. You know, we have some politicians who brag about how their average donation is, you know, $20 or something. And we have others who only have a few donations of tens of thousands of dollars. And so there is a difference, and we're ending up with more. I think we have to get people to look at the long term. You know, people are talking about, oh, how much politicians are paid and whatnot, and, you know, suggesting they should get paid out of the minimum wage or something like that. But I think what I want to see is I want to see politicians, our legislators, paid enough so they don't need other kinds of income, so we can have regular working people representing ourselves in Congress. I don't want to see Congress where it's only rich people that run for office who don't care about, well, you know, anything else.
Either rich people or people who want to get rich after they get out of Congress. You know, it seems that it's amazing when you look at the net worths of people when they get into politics and when they leave politics, how they can do awfully well in that interim period. At least that's what the common man looks at and has become skeptical about. And so, you know, I think the only issue that I would draw with looking at the long term is that in the long term, like Keynes said, we're all dead. And there are an increasing number of people in the population today who feel like they're in a desperate corner. And for them, the long term is next year.
Yeah. I mean, as I was saying 30, 40 minutes ago, I'm looking at what can I do to help my children, and not just my personal children, which I'm very proud, and a granddaughter, but their generation. And I'm trying to change the policies basically so that my granddaughter has the same kind of opportunities that I grew up having. I could go to a fine university, mostly financed by tax money, frankly. My parents did fine getting a government subsidized mortgage on the house where they bought, you know, before I was born. And I think that we need the same kind of opportunities for my granddaughter, who's now four, and your granddaughter, who, you know, whatever, and everyone's granddaughters.
Let me ask you, Mr. Pearl, because here is the perspective that the average American doesn't see or doesn't understand, because, you know, we're Americans, and yet we want to see the same change that you and others who are in your category want to see. And there are many more of us than there are of you. And yet we want to see that same change, but we can't make it happen.
You can if you agree that you want to. If everyone who's in your listener area of WAUK goes to the polls in April and November and votes, you can make that change happen.
You know, the other part of it is understanding how all of it works. It's complex. Let's be clear. There's a certain segment in one side that is doing everything within its power to make sure that the average American who struggles on a daily basis is not going to be able to get up. There's another side that clearly understands the financial aspects of it. And so it's not enough, I think, that we just tell people to vote. That's part of what the problem is. We rally. I'm a part of that. We tell people to vote. People don't understand the inner workings of these things. Very complex, as Sandy always says. And just to tell people to vote and not understand what it is they're voting for or how their vote is going to either benefit them or not benefit them, and they're left to be led to believe that what we see on television via commercials, which is what we're dealing with right now in our state with the Supreme Court, if you don't know any better, all the money is being that's flowing into the state is giving us a picture of people in a different way that we don't understand. And sometimes the only way we can reconcile it is what we see and what we hear.
Well, I think to go back to that old definition of what is crazy, crazy is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. And I suspect that part of the apathy that you're talking about is the fact that people, when they voted, have found out that the people they send to Washington doesn't make a difference to them, and these policies don't get changed for the better. And the gridlock of Congress, you know, we might have well-meaning people now on sitting on one side of the aisle or the other, but with gridlock, nothing happens. So, I suspect that's a frustration for you too, Morris, in terms of getting change done.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be paying attention. We have to each do our part. I've spent tens of thousands of dollars to help pay for those TV commercials that you were just complaining about in Wisconsin. It is frustrating. People voted for a president. You know, he said he wanted to cancel student loan debt and then got people going to court claiming that, it'll hurt them because there'll be fewer jobs for bill collectors for harassing the students. I mean, yeah, I guess that's true, but are we really more concerned about bill collectors than students? I certainly hope not, and that would make me very sad if that's what happens.
So, Sandy, I got to get you to hold a thought. We're going to a break. Our guest is Mr. Morris Pearl. He is the co-author of Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. Sandy Williams, my co-host, is here, and we'll get to you on the phone lines after the break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Again, I'm so thrilled to have Mr. Morris Pearl of Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the Rich Even Richer. And Sandy Williams on this Friday. Let's go to the phone lines. And Jack from Merrimack. Hey, good morning to you, Jack. Thank you very much for the call. You say what, sir?
Good morning. Well, a while ago, I got into a discussion with a person by pointing out that a major oil company in which I have inherited stock, and I get their quarterly reports, they had nearly tripled their quarterly profits, which were already previously at 10 digits. And they had done so by essentially taking advantage of a temporary market shortage and selling oil, much of which is domestically produced, at price gouging rates. That not only was pointed out that not only their tax rate was lower than most individual top rates, but they took advantage of a break no regular person has called the depletion allowance, and that's been called the biggest tax break in history. It lets oil companies and mineral producing entities for every bit of whatever they take out of the ground or from the earth, they get a tax break, and the more they take out, the bigger that tax break is. Now, I stated at least, you know, the oil companies certainly don't need that tax break now that they have 11-digit profits, tens of billions of dollars. And I asked how much profit this guy thought was enough. And he said, well, they're just using market forces, so they deserved all the profit they could take. And during our conversation, he repeatedly stated the Ayn Randian idea that business should be allowed essentially unlimited profits, and he never answered the question. And this is the question. How much is enough?
Jack, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. I wish I had more time. Go ahead, Morris.
Yeah, I mean, it's a basic truth. If you're in the business of selling oil or gasoline, and that's how you make money, if the price of oil and gasoline is higher, you will make more money. I mean, that's a simple explanation of how inflation has been working these days. Yeah, they're making more money. It's true. I agree.
Well, I think the caller's concern was the question of whether the profits that are the result of that should somehow have a limit. I mean, the question lots of people have who look at our capitalist system is, should there be a lid put on how much people can earn if the market circumstance allows them to earn a great deal? The only thing I would respond to that about is when we have tried to control that in the circumstance, for instance, of wartime restrictions on pricing or wartime restrictions on the operation of the marketplace, we found out that it's very complicated and very difficult and creates lots of problems. And in economies where they've tried to control it, there ends up being a lot of backlash. And so I think we can look at that and be very concerned about it. But I think the answer probably is far better served by looking at the tax laws than it is at looking at price controls.
Yeah, I think those guys should be paying like higher tax rates than people who work for a living, not lower tax rates.
Right.
And that would have an effect of decreasing this gross inequality that we're seeing.
Well, I think that's, you know, and does your group get involved in lobbying in Washington, and or at least working with the various, I guess it would be called lobbying if you're working with the elected representatives, trying to get them to feel the support for the kind of policies you're talking about? And what is the area that your group concentrates most on? Is it tax policies or?
Yeah, the three things we talk about are tax policies that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
We believe that investors and business people should pay higher tax rates than people who work for a living, not lower. We talk about money in politics, the rules we talked about, you know, in the earlier part of the segment. And the other issue we lobby about is minimum wage. We want the minimum wage to be higher. We do bring our members, our millionaire business people, investors to Washington, D.C. Our next big lobby day in Washington is actually 1 month from tomorrow. We're having our convention in Washington, D.C. April 17th and our lobby day on the 18th, where we will be marching through the halls of the office buildings, going to our elected representatives with actual business people who meet payrolls and telling them that we, the business people and investors, want you to support higher taxes on the rich.
So is it safe to say that you're more than the two people, Morris Pearl and Erica Payne? What are the numbers that are a part of the Patriotic Millionaires?
Oh, sure. We have several hundred members around the country. You can look at our website, patrioticmillionaires.org, and a lot of them have put up their names and their pictures. And we have a staff of 15 or 20 people that we are helping to help us do this.
You know, the interesting leg of that stool that you mentioned we hadn't talked about was the minimum wage. And it's been curious to me as I've watched the American business model shift increasingly towards, particularly the service industry, towards hourly workers, those who don't receive benefits. The whole business formula has begun to sort of make sure that a large segment of our population doesn't earn a living wage. And so I guess my thought has been that we ought to be pushing hard to get the minimum wage, particularly for those who work over 2,500 hours a year, to a livable wage level. And is that where you're headed with your group, trying to get the minimum wage to be a livable wage?
Yes, sir. We want to have higher minimum wage indexed to inflation, so it goes up automatically, not having to have a huge debate every year. And we want to have our country a place where business people can build businesses and invest in places where people have enough money to participate. I don't want to be a rich guy in a country filled with poor people. I can't build a business to make money that way. I want to be a rich guy in a country filled with people who all make enough money.
Like Henry Ford said,
right? Paper in their lives.
Yeah. So like Mr. Henry Pearl, Ford wanted. We've got a minute and a half left. You want to tell people where they can get the book and how they can get the book?
Sure. Any bookstore, Amazon.com or whatever bookstores you want, have Tax the Rich, How Lies, Loopholes, and Lobbyists Make the System Unfair.
And what do you want to say in the last minute?
Take a look at patrioticmillionaires.org and join up. Even if you're not a millionaire, you can ask to join our mailing list. If you are a millionaire, you can join the group and join us in helping to lobby our elected officials and helping to move the needle, as we have been over the last 10 years, in favor of these progressive policies.
Well, Sandy and I would like to extend the invitation for you to find someone every Friday for at least an hour of our time. We'd extend that invitation. We need to know more about it, and we want to do our due diligence to make sure it gets out.
Great. Thank you. And we will do that with another of our hundreds of members.
All right. That's great, man. We're on it. And nice to meet you. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Great talking to you. You're doing a good thing, really good thing. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks,
thank
everybody.
We want to thank everybody who made the show go. Sandy, as always, man, great stuff. I'll be back. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.